Welcome to this Farming for a Better Climate podcast. My name is Seamus Murphy. In this Farming for a Better Climate podcast, myself and my colleague, dairy specialist Lorna McPherson, speak to farmer Alistair Marshall and farm manager Ken McFeely of Hardgrove Farm.
If you're not looking at these things, they can sneak up on you because, you know, you can think, oh, we only put so many cows on off sink, it's not a problem, and that can slowly increase. Whereas if you're pulling those cows out for the vet to look at, on the fertility side, you're going to pick those problems up a lot sooner.
Ken and Alistair tell us about how they've made improvements on the farm, how they have improved efficiency and yield on their farm through tackling the health problems that they've had. All of the improvements that they've made on farms will also contribute to reducing the farm's total greenhouse gas emissions per output. It's a really interesting listen, and I hope you enjoy it.
Alistair Marshall, farming here at Hardgrove Farm, took over from my father. We're fairly intensive, trying to produce as much milk as possible, three times a day milking, and fairly high concentrate ration, but we're trying to make as much use as possible of homegrown forage.
Yeah, Ken McFeely, I'm the herd manager here at Hardgrove. I've been here since the end of January, 25 years experience in the dairy farming industry.
That's great. And could you give us a bit of background into Hardgrove, your average milk yield maybe, and the system you use down there?
Okay, so we're predominantly housed cows, Holstein, pedigree Holsteins. We're milking three times a day through of a 20-40 swing over. Herd average would be sitting somewhere about 11,000 litres, and our butter fats would be about 4.2, and our proteins about 3.35. We're on a totally TMR ration, so there's no concentrate fed in the parlour. We're buying straights in. We're growing about 400 acres of silage. We're cutting that three to four times a year. We're also growing whole crop for feeding to the cows as well, and we're doing somewhere between 150 and 200 acres of whole crop. We're mixing that with ground maize, caustic wheat, rape meal, soya hulls, beet pulp, you know, that sort of diet that we're using Tim Davis to help with the concentrates and the diets.
Great. What kind of issues have you had in terms of fertility on the farm, and what kind of improvements have you made?
So fertility, we were running at a preg rate when Ken came about 21. We had it up a little higher than that. But we were struggling a little bit with some third cut silage that wasn't so good, and we'd noticed that the fertility had just knocked down a little bit. I think the biggest problem that we were having though was on our transition. Our dry cows, we were finding we've got cow manager tags in them, which picks up on the cow movements, picks up on rumination. We were finding a big drop off in the eating after the calved. So we're putting that down to a subclinical milk fever. And so that was our biggest problem, was having newly calved cows that just weren't getting fired up, and we were losing milk. We were having big problems with twisted stomachs, displacements. So we decided that we had to do something about that. And just before Ken came, we were certainly looking at all the pre-calving diets. We'd tried decarb diets, and they didn't seem to be performing particularly well. When we'd actually moved over onto a different diet, and Ken was using it where he came from before, so he'd quite a bit of experience about that.
Yeah, so we've swapped over to using a calcium binder in the close-up dry cow ration, so between 2 and 3 weeks before they calve. And the idea is it stops them getting any calcium from the actual ration, and they mobilize their own calcium so that when the cow calves, she's already mobilizing her own calcium. She goes on to the milking ration, and she can get the calcium from that as well. And we don't get the problems with subclinical milk fevers, which Alistair's pointed out was causing a big problem here. And we've seen a huge improvement since that. We haven't had a DA since then.
You get health alerts coming up on the system. So it'll alert you when a cow's rumination under eating has dropped below a certain level. And we were picking up health alerts on the newly calved cows. And, you know, it wouldn't be uncommon for us to have four or five cows on health alert at any one time. And since we went to the calcium binder system, it's very, very rare for us to get any health alerts on anything that has calved. Can tell just by looking at the graphs on the cow manager that these cows are eating and ruminating exceptionally well for this, you know, for having just calved.
It's interesting you mentioned having quite a bit of subclinical milk fever. I just wondered, did you see many clinical cases? And if not, was your subclinical milk fever, was that sort of confirmed by blood testing?
We didn't see many clinical cases at all. What we were seeing was a problem with the cow's intakes just after calving. We were using the analysis system from Edinburgh University to try and work out why we were getting problems, and actually the diets on paper and the bloods that we were getting back weren't showing particular problems, but we were definitely getting this issue just after calving, within probably 10 to 12 hours after having calved. We were getting cows that just didn't want to get up and eat. We were having to use fresh cow, pump them with fluids, that sort of thing, to get them going.
The new system seems to be working well there in tackling the milk fever. Did you have any other issues when it came to health or fertility that you've made changes in and have seen improvements?
Yeah, well, certainly we're having quite high mastitis rates as well. So going back to probably July, August time last year, we were running at about 90 cases per 100 cows, which was clearly not sustainable. So we started to pre-dip. So we're pre-dipping and dry wiping. And then just before Ken came, or just as Ken came, we went from the pre-dip onto a pre-spray. And the instance of mastitis is an awful lot better now. So I'll let Ken talk to that as well.
Yeah, so there's a few aspects to this. But, you know, for me, a good parlour routine is something that you've just got to get on any dairy herd. So we use a decent 4-to-1 iodine spray. So we're pre-spraying the cows. The spray rather than the dip is to make it simple, because you've got to, if it's not easy for the guys to do, it's going to get missed or not done properly. So we pre-spray, wipe, make sure they're clean, and then they're attached. And obviously you work down the parlor, so there's that time lapse as well before the units are attached, so that the milk's running once the unit's attached to the cow. The other changes we've made are we've changed the clusters in the parlor and the liners. So we're actually on a much lighter cluster now. The old cluster was over, it's almost 3.5 kilograms, and the new one is 1.8. But what some people would think, you'd struggle to milk the cows, but actually the milking speed is up from where it used to be, and we're finishing milking quicker than we used to, and reduced mastitis and all the things that go with it.
It's great to see that you've had a significant reduction in your mastitis cases. 90 is very high, and really the target should be around about 30 cases per 100 cows per year. And it's quite possible. You've made a lot of changes to, like you say, your parlour routine and the clusters, which has obviously had a significant impact. But I would also imagine that having reduced your cases of subclinical milk fever, that would also have an impact as well on reducing the risk of mastitis in early lactation. What do you think your cases of mastitis are running at now?
The last 4 months have been 13 per 100. And that's, we've had some pretty bad weather, muggy sort of that weather where you get environmental mastitis. So I'm hoping to get, I'd like to see it in single figures for a 12-month average. If we could do that, I'd be really chuffed.
I think, you know, the figure I gave you of August last year at 90, that was on the high side, but certainly wasn't out of the ordinary. So once we started the pre-dip, I think we went down to about 40 cases for about the 4 months prior to Ken coming. And since then, we've just seen those cases dropping right down. So as Ken said, we're now running at 13 per 100 cows. So it's a huge improvement. In 12 months. and a very big improvement in the last 4 months.
That's a fantastic achievement. And when you think about, you know, what mastitis costs, I mean, you see a lot of figures banded about for the cost of a case of mastitis, sort of anywhere between £70 to £250 a case, just depending on the severity of it. And a lot of that loss is really down to the loss in milk production due to damage within the udder. So would you say, having reduced your mastitis cases so significantly, are you now noticing cows are milking much better, more efficiently, and you're getting more milk out of them?
I think there's no doubt that'll be the case, Lauren. I think we're seeing cows getting on to milk far quicker. We're not seeing this problem of, you know, a cow that's 4 or 5 days calved and having struggled to get going. So she's producing and getting up to peak quicker, and they seem to be holding peak much longer as well. And I think, you know, we're early days yet. I don't think we'll actually see the full benefit of that until we've probably been on it for 12 months. But I think I can't give you figures that back it up yet. But I'm sure if you asked me that question 12 months' time, I could give you, you know, the details that would say, well, there you are, we've actually improved milk yield and cows are doing much better. And I think, you know, the cow manager thing that has shown up the transition being so much better, I think that's key to the subclinical milk fever cases being less. And then, as you say, that has fed through to less mastitis because cows are just generally healthier.
With those improvements in health, you're going to see improvements in efficiency and then a reduction in your carbon emissions as well, which is going to become more and more important into the future as well.
You know, the other thing that Ken's focusing on is the pregnancy rate. And, you know, as I said, we were down about 21. But we've also taken the decision to go just about 100% sex semen because we're trying to avoid dairy bull calves. So, you know, I think results are fairly good in that too.
Yeah, so our latest preg rate, the 12-month average now is just short of 26%. So, you know, you can't jump these things up too quickly, but we're definitely heading in the right direction. The cows transitioning better is going to improve that. There's lots of figures bandied about, but certainly we're seeing better heats. But as well as that, we're being more proactive then, because there's less non-bulling cows, we're being more proactive with those. Anything that gets the voluntary waiting period, which is 52 days here, if we haven't seen a heat, we'll just pull it out for the vet on the weekly routine. So that, you know, we can see, is she cystic? Is she just quiet? Or is she, you know, is there a problem that we need to look at? And then we'll act on that so that we're not just waiting for cows to get to 70, 80, 90 days, stick them on an ovsink and hope for the best.
You're obviously being very proactive when it comes to the health and fertility on your farm. How important do you think it is to be proactive with those issues when it comes to improving your farm efficiency?
Yeah, huge. You know, if you're not looking at these things, they can sneak up on you, because, you know, you can think, oh, we only put so many cows on ovsink, it's not a problem, and that can slowly increase. Whereas if you're pulling those cows out for the vet to look at on the fertility side, you're going to pick those problems up a lot sooner, because you will get little instances of cystic cows and what have you, and that can relate back to maybe a feeding issue. You've had some poor silage a few weeks before or whatever, but you can pick up and act on those things a lot sooner.
I think the other thing is that, you know, our culling rate was running far too high, so again, it's going to take a little bit of time for that to filter through, but we're already seeing a drop off of about 2%, so we're 2% less culling rate than we were. And mortality rate wasn't really bad at all, but I think we're probably 0.5% better, maybe 1% better on mortality rate as well. So if we can steadily get the culling rate lower, we'll have more chance of improving the quality of the herd. We're trying hard to breed the kind of cow that's going to last for, you know, a bit of time and produce, you know, a lot of milk in our lifetime. So we want to try and get lifetime yield up as much as we can. And hopefully if the cows are staying about for longer, we'll be able to sell surplus heifers in years to come. The other thing that we have focused on to try and help with that is lameness. And about 6 months ago, we started to really ramp up the number of cows that were getting trimmed. We were getting too many cases of lameness. And if you look back to August, January last year, we were doing something like 66 cases of lameness per month with 36 repeats. And we've now got that down to 42 cases per month with 28 repeats. Some of that will be the fact that we have culled some of them out, but we're certainly trying to do cows sort of 70 days calved and then about 2 weeks before they get dried off. So they're getting at least two trims during their lactation.
There's obviously a bigger cost to it if your foot trimmer is doing more feet. But what we're finding now is he's doing less lame cows and more trims. So, you know, for a start, those cows are milking more because a lame cow is going to produce a lot less than a cow that's just there to get a quick look at. And the other big saving, obviously, is the antibiotic use, which is a big buzzword, I guess, at the moment. And, you know, everyone's trying to reduce it. And if we're treating less cows for lameness and mastitis, we're using a lot less antibiotics, which is good for everyone because there's less chance of contaminating the tank of milk and all the cost and hassle that goes with those things.
I think we've got some figures for the reduction in the vet bill as well, which I'm pretty sure, and if you compare the last 4 months to the previous 4 months, we've had a net reduction of about £5,000 over those 4 months. So something like 16% reduction in vet bill.
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely brilliant saving. It's great to see that, you know, the two things that, you know, I think consumers are really concerned about, you know, it is antibiotic use. There's big pressure on dairy farmers now to reduce antibiotic use, but concerns about the environment are growing all the time. And, you know, thinking about carbon footprint, the amount that you've done to reduce mastitis, improve fertility and reduce lameness, that must have quite a significant effect on the efficiency of milk production. So more litres of milk to kind of spread emissions over is bound to be having a positive impact on your carbon footprint. So again, all in all, this is a really great story of how you've managed to improve overall health of the herd, which not only is going to benefit milk production and profitability, but also, you know, a really positive impact on the environment as well.
I think the other thing, Lorna, is that we're focused on genetics too. So we're already in the top, I think we're within the top 1% of the Holstein breed in the UK in terms of our PLI. And so we're certainly focusing on trying to get, you know, the herd as efficient as possible in terms of genetics, but also in terms of physical performance.
Yeah. That's very evident given the yields that you're getting at 11,000 litres to achieve, you know, butter fats of 4.2 and protein levels in the milk of 3.35. You know, these are impressive, you know, yields of constituents for the yield that the cows are doing. So, yeah, genetics plays a huge role there. And obviously health is as important. And as a nutritionist, you know, it's quite often the nutritionist or the diet often gets the blame for cows not performing. But I would say first and foremost, genetics and health are the two most important things to really focus on. And if you have your genetics right and your health right, you can get away with nutrition maybe not being 100%, but you can have the best diet, you can have the best facilities. But if you've not got the health behind the cows, you're not going to get the productivity.
Yeah, and, you know, we have focused on fat and protein yield as well, and we're running just under 900 kilograms of fat and protein per cow at the minute. So our ambition is to try and get that up to nearer 1,000 if possible.
What's next then for Highgrow Farm? What are your hopes for the future?
So I think we're slowly going to increase cow numbers just because our culling rate's going to be less. We're focusing on the genetics, and I think one of my challenges is to try and get as much milk from forage as we can. So focusing on growing the best quality silage and whole crop that we can to try and, if not reduce concentrate feeding, then get more milk from forage.
Yeah, I mean, mine's on the other side that we discussed, which is the herd health. You know, keeping the fertility in a positive direction. So hoping to get the preg rate up close to 30, keep the, you know, the disease levels down. So mastitis, metritis, and you know, lameness, and obviously the two things marry up. So if we can get the one thing right, then the other will follow.
Another thing that we've just tried a little bit of an experiment with is to do some deep beds. At the minute, we're bedding cows on mattresses. We're using various different materials to bed them with because we're obviously struggling to get sawdust through lockdown. So we've tried paper. We've done a few beds as an experiment where we've raised the board at the back and given them sort of 5-6 inches of deep bedding. And so far the cows have responded in that group by continually trying to get into those beds. So there's almost like a queue, and we're going to do the rest of the shed, see how we get on with that. But again, this was one of Ken's ideas to try and improve the number of hours of lying time and rumination. If we can do that, then hopefully that'll feed through into increased milk production as well.
And so you seem to be really busy at the farm. There's loads of stuff going on. What would you recommend then for a dairy farmer listening? What would you recommend that could be the first step in looking to improve the efficiency and milk yield on the farm?
I think that the biggest single change that we made was the transition diet. And you know, I think you've got to be cautious here because not every diet works in every farm. And we've found that we've tried 2 or 3 different diets before we've hit on one that seems to work here. It may not work elsewhere, but I think if I was giving anybody any advice, it would be keep looking, keep trying till you get something that you can actually quantify as being a big help to your transition cows. And, you know, I've mentioned the tags that we have that pick up movement. Again, that's a good tool that we can use to monitor how the cows are actually performing.
Yeah, and yeah, I'd say the same. There's so much technology now available for farmers, and people should be looking at what they can do to, you know, and it makes life easier for you as well, but look at these things that can pick up problems and pick up anything that's going on in the cows. And don't just assume that everything's fine. If it's just gone the way it's always gone, you can always make an improvement there.
And I would certainly agree with that as well. Really, the transition phase is the most important phase during the production cycle to get right in terms of nutrition and management. It's the time when most of your sort of health issues seem to occur. And even thinking about fertility, fertility is something that we still need to consider during that last 3 weeks of the close-up dry period as well. That's when the eggs are being developed that we want to fertilize, you know, 60 to 80 days after calving. So we've got to think about fertility then, because what we do in the transition phase and even in that late gestation phase, that has a huge impact on fertility further down the line.
For more information on how you too can help to improve an efficiency of your farm, you can visit the Farming for a Better Climate website, where there's loads of case studies and technical guides to help you improve efficiencies and ultimately reduce your carbon footprint. Also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter to keep up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Farming for a Better Climate. And make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. Thanks again.